Hello and welcome to Mental Health Ireland's podcast, promoting positive mental health and well-being with our guests and you, our listeners. My name is Carmen from Mental Health Ireland. And on this episode, we'll be talking to Sean Moynihan, the CEO of Alone, one of Ireland's leading charities for older people, and comedian, writer and actress Alison Spittle. On this episode, we're asking, are we lonelier than ever in Ireland? Alison, Sean, welcome and thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks very much for the invite.
Sean, are we lonelier than ever in Ireland?
I think we are. I think the evidence is there. I think the fact that we're having this conversation points it out. I think other people are talking about it too. And I think the starting point to dealing with something is to start the conversation and to talk about it and name it.
Does loneliness discriminate against age, gender? Kind of where people might live, like urban, rural.
Does it
have a particular factor?
I think when we did the work last year, sort of on the loneliness task force, we asked for submissions from all around the country. And we got around 400 submissions. And the variation of them would tell you that it's fairly universal. That ultimately is you can be lonely in the middle of a housing estate, right? In the biggest housing estate in the country, or some people aren't lonely and they're up. Do you know what I mean? I think it's the difference between isolation and loneliness. And some people, do you know what I mean? You could be in a very rural area and not actually lonely. The other thing is huge variations. Older people are more susceptible to it. And obviously, we work with older people, usually because of ill health, frailty, the inability maybe to get out, and maybe just because of the journey of life, maybe lost friends, do you know what I mean? Lost a partner, lost spouse. These types of things, family move away, they're more susceptible and less able to combat the issues. But some of the stories that came in were people, you know, and one that I remember was a young guy in college, and he said it was Tuesday and he just realised he'd gone to the gym every day. Do you know what I mean? Mind himself looking out. But he hadn't spoken to anybody in 4 days.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And another one, a public servant who had retired in their mid-50s, which is meant to be the dream for all of us, that we get out early, had a good solid pension, nice house paid for, was on his own. But the reality is he hadn't got those connections outside of work. He just hadn't got the connections. And so ultimately is I think we don't fully appreciate the journeys people go on and the way society has changed that leads people to these painful situations that affects both their physical and their mental health.
So you say it affects both our physical and our mental health and manifests in both ways. Mm. What does loneliness look like? How does it impact our mental and our physical health?
Well, the first thing to say is it's in some ways a hard thing to define because it's a feeling that you're missing something. So for some people, loneliness is like they have very little connection at all. For others, they may look like they have a lot of connection, but ultimately it isn't enough to satisfy them or their feelings or their needs. I think all the evidence, and I suppose there's a huge amount of research and data that shows that ultimately being lonely will actually shorten your life. There's a huge amount of data that shows that loneliness is a predictor to people getting Alzheimer's, heart diseases, and ultimately is that in Tilda sort of says a lot of it is actually really low-grade depression as well, because the way I view it, and obviously I'm not a clinician, is that, you know, it's like a stairs. People go down, they lose connections, they lose confidence, they lose more connections, they lose more confidence. So sometimes it's very hard and bit by bit the circles get smaller.
What is a clinician?
A doctor. A doctor, oh, right. Somebody with a clinical background.
Clinician. Said clinician. I was like, is this a loneliness person? Or, that's class. Right, cool, clinician. I know what that is and I'm sorry.
Well, there was a minister for loneliness, wasn't there, in the UK? That just, as Alison was saying, there's a person for loneliness. There was a minister.
And I think the UK...
And that was stopped, was it?
Yeah, no, the UK launched, and it was actually a minister, and it was one of those ministers that had a triple barrel title, and loneliness was at the end of it, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And they did launch a strategy in the UK, but it was actually only launched for England.
Okay.
So they think. So I think what an awful lot of countries really picked up on that, they really turned up and said, "Okay, where do we need to go on this? Because they were the first to do it. They see it in their own countries. We see it in our countries and our country. And part of the campaigning is to get some strategy in the area, because at the moment there is no strategy, which means there are no funded programs, which means there are no plans. Do you know? So ultimately is to get an element of strategy about what we're going to try and do.
Okay. Alison, so you're a comedian, you're a writer, so you work very much in the creative space. Mm-hmm. I saw you in the Edinburgh Fringe Festival.
Oh, lovely.
I was just saying to you before, I was following you on Instagram and you were on the road, like you were away for quite a long time.
Yeah.
By
like
yourself.
Lorry drivers. That is in every aspect.
Okay. So do you find that in your experiences working a lot of the time by yourself, have you experienced loneliness?
I think I've experienced loneliness as much as other people have experienced loneliness. I feel that being a comedian can be quite lonely sometimes, because you can do a room, you could do a gig to a room of like 600 people and then, you know, go to Barack Obama Plaza by yourself and get yourself a snack box and go, why am I doing this? So, yeah, I do. There is loneliness, but like, I don't feel that like being a comedian makes me any more lonely than another person. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like freelancing, I suppose. Is that taxi drivers have probably the most similar jobs to us because they deal with people on a one to one, but the conversation is kind of really only one way, even though I'm just it's my way that I'm going about it.
Yeah. Like taxi drivers and hairdressers are another one that they almost become like therapists.
They do.
But it's people kind of want
and
to go
almost
in.
And they almost make other people be therapists as well. It can go that way.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But yeah, being a comedian, I get lonely sometimes. It's so weird because I probably am very defensive when you ask me, do I get lonely? Because I'm like, what are you talking about? Because I feel that there's a stigma around loneliness.
Yeah.
You know, to admit that you're lonely, I feel, is to admit that you failed in some respect. You know, whether that be social. That's not true, but that's what it feels like. I'd say that's why there must be very hard for people to reach out and go, I feel lonely.
I think
like,
that's
what point did I get to?
I think that's a really interesting comment, like, and I think it's right. What is the language around it, like, to name it? And I think there is an element of destigmatizing it. And I think, in fairness to a lot of work by the Mental Health Commission, by a lot of people around mental health, has created the language in other areas around this and destigmatizing. So I think loneliness is one of those things. I think sometimes for the older people, because we work with older people, is there's some type of feel of failure if you sort of say, I've ended up on my own, like, where, you know, did you have no friends, relations to your family, not whatever, and all of that. So I think in some ways we have to sort of show people that there's a bit of a perfect storm. The way we live has changed. The way we work, you describe working on your own.
Yeah.
A lot more people work on their own. A lot more people work from home. So much more has gone online. So many shops and things that are in the community are gone. And same for so many people who might have been in housing estates or in the community during the day aren't there. So I think people live a different way, and we have to sort of normalise the conversation and name it, because sometimes people don't actually realise they're lonely because over 5-10 years maybe, their lives have got smaller, their interactions, and people don't always realise, and then suddenly they go, oh my God, you know, look at the way I'm living now and look how painful this is and difficult it is.
Well, definitely. I have an older relative and his wife died 10 years ago, and he lives far away from all of us, the rest of his family. I'm constantly ringing in and I'm constantly ringing him and going, who did you talk to today? And he'd be like, oh, no one. Do you know what I mean? And I'm like, well, you should join a group or there should be something, because he's got all his faculties about him and he could be a great socializer. But it's very hard as a person that has family members that could be lonely. You don't know what to say to them other than join a club. Do you know what I mean? And then they go, what club? What are you on about, Alison? Do you know?
The club.
Yeah.
The club down the road.
Like, so in my situation, what would you say I should say to my older relative?
Well, I think I think you named it there, is it comes down to personality types as well. And so the point is, you know, as I say, sometimes for people, the confidence is gone. Sometimes their physical health is gone. For us, we now would say have we've around 2,000 volunteers visiting older people, right? But that's going up at the rate of around 100 a month.
That's great.
The next 5 years, we figure we're going to have, by 2023-24, 9,000 volunteers. Like that's the scale. Yeah. And that's not a response to growth for growth's sake. That's a response to the number of older people coming forward.
Mm-hmm.
And,
right.
And I'm always amazed. Around a third of the older people who come to us actually ring us themselves, which I always imagine is just really brave. How many hang-ups was there before the conversation started? You know, to actually realise, no, this isn't the way it would be. So we want to encourage that. Mm. But in other cases, it's people maybe coming out of hospital and somebody says, who are you going home to?
Mm. Yeah.
What's happening? Yeah. And so for some people, you know, joining Active Retirement, who's a great organisation, that's who they are. And they'll be able to do that and everything else. For other people, I think over 80 spend 80% of their time in their own house. So really, we've got to reach in. So there's times where it's getting the person reach in and reach out. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So for us, what the volunteers do is they visit. And I love this because it's all about human connection. Because then the older person, you know, we're all always matching people by geographical area, but also by interests, you know.
That's brilliant.
And people are great because people will ask you, any chance you can find me an Arsenal fan?
That's very important. You know?
And sometimes I wonder, is that so they can argue about Arsenal or does it cheer together? Mm. But then the thing is you get stories where we recently matched a volunteer with an older person and they asked the older person what to do and she says, go to the cinema. She hadn't been to the cinema in 10 years. Do you know what I mean? Mm. And you have these things. But I think families shouldn't feel guilty. You're naming it there. Shouldn't feel guilty because ultimately is you know, family sizes have changed. Geographical people moved and everything else is. And really, we look at this as like reimagining the community and the volunteers represent the community. And maybe 30, 40 years ago, or maybe I've got green tinted glasses for the past, but is these things might have happened informally.
Yeah.
Now, you're visiting older people, sometimes with frailty issues, everything else is, people are short of time. So you train them, you support them. But it's a one-to-one service because I've got time for you. And if you're annoyed about what was on Joe Duffy yesterday, we're going to talk about that today.
Yeah.
If you're looking at football, whatever you're interested in.
Yeah.
Because I think people will still want to be heard, whether it's about politics or life or their interests, you know?
Sean, you talk about you've more volunteers than ever coming forward. Do you think there's an element of the volunteers might be lonely as well and looking for a connection? And this is a question for Alison as well.
And do you know what's so weird? I felt defensive of the volunteers there. It's like, I was offended. It's so strange, isn't it? That's my issue. Do you know what I mean?
It's maybe as a younger person and as a comedian, your role is to, you know, make people laugh and bring joy into the room.
Yeah.
Do you think, you know, we have language around older people and we have volunteers for older people experiencing loneliness. But what about younger people in their kind of position? Do you think there is more of a stigma or more, as you say, a defensiveness about being young, meant to be kind of the prime of your life, having the time of your life and feeling that disconnect?
Loneliness is seen as an older person's issue. Mm. It's not really seen as a younger person's issue.
Mm.
I mean, I'm struck. Do you work with younger people?
Well, I think the point around the volunteers is really interesting. I think that there's huge research. Trinity have done great research that shows volunteering is nearly the best thing you can do for your own health.
Yeah.
Because people,
giving back. Yeah.
You know, in a world that's so cynical, people still want to contribute. Mm-hmm. People still want to help. People still want to do the right things. But I would figure as well that, especially in urban areas where people have moved from the country or moved into the country, right? We have an awful lot of people volunteering 25 to 40.
Mm-hmm.
And we sort of feel like, we feel that's them. They're getting an awful lot out of it. They enjoy it. But I also think is there might be an element where they're actually lonely themselves. And it's a way that they actually volunteer, intergenerational, as they call it. But like, you know, but ultimately is where they actually sort of fill their own time, but also with something that has a meaning and a purpose and help somebody else as well as themselves.
Yeah, I kind of struggle to think who would my friendship group be if I wasn't a comedian or a person that does creative stuff, because you're kind of working for the one endeavor and you kind of bond that way. And I can see how volunteers, it would be the same for them as well. But it's kind of, I find myself when I'm on a bus, I'll go out of my way to talk to an older person on their own, because you got 20 minutes on the bus and sure, you might as well. But I have just moved to London. So people were warning me that it would be really lonely. And social interactions, because you're trying to make friends as an adult, it's so difficult. It's because when you're a kid, you're in the one area and you're supposed to, you know, try and make friends and experiment and everything. And now you have to not only go, oh, you're geographically close to me, so I want you to be my friend, but you also have to go, I want you to be my friend because I like your activities or I like your personality. It's a lot like dating. A lot of rejection in it as well.
Well, there is meetup groups now. There's social meetup groups, a lot that are becoming more popular.
And it's so handy.
For people of a certain age bracket, because you're like, hi, at this age, we're out of school, we're out of college. We have enough experience now to know what we like, what we don't like. You know, our personalities are coming through more. So how do you strike up a friendship
at this age? I'm struggling. Like, it's so strange. I know Girl Crew is a fantastic group.
Yeah.
They were originally, the women would go on to Tinder and say that they were just looking for friendships, and then other women would find them and say, do you want to meet up and go to the theatre or something together? And that was them adapting technology to suit their needs. Mm. And it's so strange because I do think, this is a mad conversation to have, but I think when I'm older, what activities am I going to do? How am I going to have my social outlets? Because I feel what will be probably horrible of my generation is that, like, Facebook will exist. And, you know, my grandparents are obsessed with who's dead lately. You know, you get the weekly report of which funerals they went to. And I know that my Facebook is going to end up kind of, you know, I won't even get to tell my grandchildren guess who's dead, because I'll have it up on Facebook and everybody will know. So that bit of social interaction is gone. So I'm just like, what's it going to be like when I'm older? Like, I'd love to play bowls, I've decided.
Okay.
And aqua aerobics.
Okay.
I do that anyway, but I'll keep that up. Okay. That's my favourite leisure activity.
Well, you have it all sorted then. You have a plan.
Yeah. Bowls, aqua aerobics. What else? Go on a few saga cruises.
Walking tour.
Genuinely, I'm looking forward to being older, because I think it's a gift to be older.
Absolutely. It's a privilege.
You know, it is an absolute privilege to be older.
But so, I think it's funny.
But I am afraid of being alone.
But it's funny how you mention sort of you're talking about men and women and how sometimes, you know, women adapt to that. I mean, unfortunately, the research proves that all the sort of stereotypes that women reach out more are absolutely there. But even among that, I know Tilda had a thing that I think it's a third of women and only 16% of men actually felt they had a close friend they could confide in.
Mm.
You know? And That's difficult for people. And I think the huge thing around all this stuff, and I noticed, because loneliness become, you know, much more visible and people talking about it, is I think now every time somebody has a funding application for some service, they stick at the end, and combats loneliness.
Yeah, you know what I mean?
Whether there's any proof of that or not.
Yeah.
But so I think we've got to keep driving the face-to-face. We've got to keep driving people talking to each other, whether at the same age or between ages and everything else, and realise that we have to put effort in, whereas before things happen naturally. Now the things have moved so online
that social interaction has become difficult.
It's become more challenging for people. And then, like that, I think people are much more fearful of rejection, whether that's on the 16 bus or wherever it happens.
Or online.
I am more afraid of talking to one person than I am doing a gig to 600 people. Mm. Like, way more afraid. It puts way more nerves into me. I wonder, like, because it's such a great organisation alone, I wonder if we could, like, give people tools in their 30s to deal with stuff when they're in their 70s. Like, some sort of, like,
an early intervention.
Early intervention, that type.
To build
of
that into our culture and our policies.
Yeah.
Sean, just speaking of policies and cultures that are different than our own, is there any country in particular that's dealing with loneliness well? Any initiatives that are working to combat loneliness?
I think Scotland's well known for doing stuff, and obviously we always name the wonderful Danes and Finns and everything else, you know. But I think the thing is there's no silver bullet, right? I think it is about, so even if you take submissions and different people's ideas, everybody's proposing so many different things. I think we still need more research to actually prove what actually lowers the loneliness. So obviously we do the befriending where the volunteers visit and spend time. And then they also bring people on social activities, and they also do some practical tasks, like if somebody needs the bins done or a lift to a hospital appointment, you know, things like that, especially because there might be difficult things happening at that point. And the science is we start off meeting a social need, mm-hmm. and then it ends up meeting an emotional need, like any friendship. Mm. I think what happens is, if you look at like sort of strategy in England and that, is you come up with a multiple of actions that needs to be done. Phone services, befriending services, meet things for younger people, engagement online, you know, access to mental health services, earlier interventions, group work, all these different things that people propose that we should do. Unfortunately, to do it, probably have to do it in a huge amount is building capacity in the community. You know what I mean? Whether it's activities, aligning services, all these things. So we create more engagements between people. Mm. And I sometimes think around loneliness, people, one, the language of naming, people sort of think it's, you know, what we do in that area. And we provide housing to homeless people, and we do what's called support coordination, deal with all types of challenges and issues for people. And do an awful lot around technology. But I think people think when we do the loneliness, they sort of think, oh, well, that's all sort of softy stuff. It's no benefit. But the reality is, this is real health issues for people.
Yeah. Mm.
And this is real pain behind doors, regardless of the age of the person who's struggling with it. You know, it's real, you know.
Yeah. I think they shouldn't view it as that, because I think everyone has a deep fear of loneliness. Like, that's probably one of the most universal fears that people have, is that they will be lonely at some point. And we've all felt it as well. Like, I think it's like a canary in the coal mine as well, being lonely. I remember once I spent 4 days in my room and wouldn't leave my room because I went through a traumatic situation of someone broke into my house and had a weapon. And then I just became scared to leave my house. But it became so much that I didn't leave my room for ages. And I knew at that point, when you count out, you know, didn't speak to anyone. But Netflix is fantastic. But Janie, it's terrible in a way that, like, I was going, oh, no, I'm not leaving my room because I want to watch all 4 seasons of Orange is the New Black. But it wasn't that. You can paper up a lot of stuff with technology. And people mistake not being bored with not being lonely. And I don't, you know, like, people look at their phones all the time. And I do it. I mean, I can't even maintain eye contact properly with a person for more than 10 minutes. So I'm addicted to my phone because I was so afraid of being... I moved schools a lot when I was a kid. So there was a lot of, like, alone time and kind of getting those social interactions in. And I kind of definitely papered it up with reading books when I was a kid. Then it turned into phones, internet, everything like that. And you kind of think, if your mind is kept busy, that you're not lonely, but it doesn't make up for social interaction at all.
I think it doesn't. And the question even there around strategies for stuff, at the moment, right now, I don't think it's been publicly announced, but hopefully it will be. But who do you go to? So what government department? So Mental Health Commission knows, we know that when you want to change something, right, you're looking for, okay, who's the minister? Grant. Where's that? Whose responsibility? Grant. We'll find a public official in the department and start putting in a submission. You start the conversation. Everything else is. Loneliness doesn't fall under mental health.
What?
Do you know what I mean? It doesn't. It's not covered by the staff and mental health in the Department of Health. It technically doesn't fall under the Minister for Older People. Yet there is a chance, in fairness to the minister, that he's going to take it. So if you imagine it, like, it doesn't fall under anybody's brief, which means there's nobody. There wasn't anybody working on a strategy. So there's nobody to go. So where you get a lot of HSE, Department of Health, which, by the way, might be an unpopular thing to say, are full of really good people doing the best they can in difficult situations, right? But there was nobody where you could go and say, right, here's our submission. You have loneliness, even if it's tagged onto 5 other things you do. Mm-hmm. So the point is, very hard to get traction on that. So the first thing for us was always, okay, whose department has it? What minister is it under? And it's not necessarily that you want to not always talk to the minister. It's just that who has the authority. So ultimately, so that's been the first sort of thing we've been working on, is so you have somewhere to go with this.
And why is it this way, Sean? Why is it, because loneliness is not seen as a tangible thing? Because it's really an absence of something. So it's not a presence of something.
I think in some ways it's a case of, you know, when something's slightly outside of It's like a, it's like having three people in a room and there's everybody's got a job description and then something comes up as a big issue and everybody goes, well, it's not in my job description. Do you know what I mean? Like, and then the point is everybody's wondering, well, should I take it? And in fairness, say to the current minister for older people, it's not just an older people's issue.
No.
If we put it into the older people, does it fit there? So in some ways, part of that has been trying to campaign to encourage and say, you need to trash this out because we need to talk, we need, it needs to be on somebody's desk, somebody's portfolio, so that we can actually really get that. Now, the Institute of Public Health is doing some work at the moment around it, and a lot of us have been feeding in there because, again, we look at it as a public health issue. So one, if we can get somebody responsible, two, make it a public health issue, then we'll get policies and practices and and initiatives to combat it. So I know they'll come out with something later in the year because they've started to do things there. So these are the type of tractions that Mental Health Commission understands, people in NGOs understand. These are the things you climb, you know, you keep. And in some ways, as NGOs, we are the innovators. We feel it on the ground. The people come to us first. Yeah. And then we have to bring it up to the policymakers and say, do you know this is an emerging need? Do you know this is where it is? Because the system may not be feeling it and not understand it. So we've also got to help them, you know, give them a few ideas what to do with it as well.
Yeah. I guess a question for both of you. Any advice that we get at Mental Health Ireland, we get calls from people and we signpost services and we can offer some advice for a range of difficulties. If someone was to call in tomorrow to Mental Health Ireland and say, I'm lonely, I'm both an older person or a younger person. Alison, from your experience, and Sean, from your knowledge and your experience, what would you say to them?
If someone rang me and said they're lonely.
They're lonely, what do I do?
Well, I think they should, I don't know what they should do. Ring up alone? Would that be the thing that they should do?
Sean?
I think for older people, obviously that's there. For younger people, I think for us, obviously, we do obviously the befriending, and then we also do phone services. So there's older people we ring every day of the week, get them up, prompt around medication, get moving, encouragement, talk to them, just make sure they're all right, and then revert back to staff things. But for younger people, volunteering Ireland, you know, getting involved in things, because not everybody wants to go to the pub. Not everybody's going. Not everybody's sort of going to the gym every day of the week. You know, and also it can take an awful lot of confidence to go into these places. Sometimes we need a friend or somebody to bring us along when we want to join something.
Yeah.
For those awkward moments, like none of us like walking through a door when we don't know what's the other side of it. Do you know what I mean? Like, and that can be difficult.
I think to say that you're lonely is a brave thing to say. But also, like, I know that at my loneliest points, it was due to something else. It was due to, like, PTSD or like, some trauma or just plain old mental illness. So, like, volunteer and everything like that and then get yourself on a waiting list, you know, if you got a medical card or go private and maybe get yourself some counselling as well. I think the two-tiered approach would be lovely. But I think volunteering is amazing. It's a brilliant thing to do. It's... I'm trying to think of, I volunteered when I lived in my village in Westmeath because I had no job and I was very depressed. But working with the kids was great because you were working for a bigger aim. And I think sometimes as well, you know, you can feel like there's a lot of no direction in life and a lot of people kind of have that.
I think that's really, again, same thing as we all need a purpose.
We do.
And I think sometimes when people retire, you know, sometimes we people volunteer for us, but other people end up, you know, losing their identity a little bit when they retire. And again, for people volunteering or people younger, we all need a purpose. We all need to have a sense that we're of value to ourselves and also to others. So I think creating a purpose, whether you're a person being visited or you're a person volunteering for us or for some other cause that is close to your heart. And thing is, you know, there's a big program for older people involved, which is all about getting up and getting going. Do you know what I mean? No matter how the day is, bad the day is, it's the same as mental health with your physical health. Get up, get dressed, get washed, leave the house and now see how does the day look now? You know what I mean? And ultimately, that's what we need to encourage people to do. What we are going to need is strategies in the area, and we are going to need more research, and we're going to need initiatives that are funded that are focused mainly on loneliness, not that it's an add-in, that it's a thing in itself. Mm. It's a subset maybe of mental health. It's a subset of where we need to encourage and support, and we need to create those connections. I'm always hopeful, because ultimately is once we start doing things like today, naming problems, then ultimately people get interest, people name it for themselves. People will hear this hopefully and go, do you know what, that's actually what's going on in my world. I need to do something about that. You know,
I listen to podcasts when I'm lonely, because it like makes me feel like I'm interacting with someone. And I was just a point you made, I was thinking about this, right? I only know my elderly neighbour because my boiler burst and it flooded into her house, and then we had to have a conversation. But I feel that if that didn't happen, I don't think I'd know her name. Do you know what I mean? Or be chatting. How, as a younger person, would you say you could make the first approach without breaking up your boiler to
I was about to say, you know, without knocking down your neighbour's house. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Like, you know, I think it's like everything else is in, for all of us, isn't it? I mean, I'm the same. I live in an apartment block, and the thing is, there's you go through a door and there's eight other doors.
Yeah.
I think there's two people out of that eight. I'm there 12 years and there's two out of that eight I know.
Yeah.
And that's really, and I think unfortunately that's the modern way we live, and we have to balance it out, and we need to work towards situations that we all have the confidence and the support we need. Because, I mean, we've done a huge amount of work with the LGBT community as well, because again, same thing, people
who can
end up, huge amount of people could end up on their own in later life, and the fear of it and everything else is, and you know, especially we've had a lot of experience of maybe older men who never came out. Do you know what I mean? And,
yeah.
And everything else is, so it's always been a bit of a silent world, you know what I mean? And a world where they kept safe, or they kept to themselves. So I think there's a lot of groups that actually understand this and have contributed. Once people understand it, they've got a contribution to make to the solution.
Yeah. Sean, Alison has told us that one way she feels more connected is by listening to podcasts.
Yeah.
And I would agree, it's something more engaging than sitting watching Netflix. It's right, which can be very passive.
Well, definitely, because like I have a podcast and people will talk to me as if they know me.
Mm.
And I'll go, how do you know that information in my head? And I'm like, oh, because I've blathered it out, you know. They're like, good luck if you move to London. I'm like, do you know that? What I've been talking about for months. And like, I listen to podcasts to feel that connection as well. Because, you know, I don't know, it's mad. I think we're using a lot of little plasters at the moment for like, to make up for actual social interaction. And I don't know, I'm not saying it as if it's a bad thing. I think it's grand. I think whatever gets you through, you know.
Sean, what do you personally do feel more connected or stay connected?
I think that's a really, really good question. And as we've had this conversation, I've sort of probably thought about the deficits in my own actions. Do you know what I mean? I think it's interesting, you know. I work a lot. I listen to a lot of podcasts well. Yeah, things. But I'm kept busy enough because I have a little boy who keeps me running around now. He half my connections are probably coming through him and bringing him to football or something like at this stage, you know. But I do see, you know, in the world I live in, it's the exact same. Do you know what I mean?
Mm.
So ultimately is we all got ding, and I can imagine and I can see when I stop working. So my work has become a huge focus of what I did. Things I used to do, I've gone, I'm not playing any sport anymore. I'm gone older than that. So I go for a swim a couple of times a week, but that's isolating as well. So you can see where we all live a life, no matter who we think we are, where a couple of fractures, or you retire, you lose a group of friends, you stop playing sport or an engagement or whatever you used to do. Mm. And all of a sudden you lose a few friends. Mm. If you're lucky enough to have a spouse or a partner and they pass away, you obviously lose those connections. So this is what happens, you know, if you have children, they move away. So this is the natural journey of life.
Mm.
For younger people, again, you know, go to college, all the different fractures where they move to London maybe, and maybe it's less friendly, whatever. So it's the exact same thing. But these are, I think the point I'm trying to get across is these are things that happen to everybody.
Mm.
And it's so easy to end up cut off. Older people, because I work with them, I can see the journey and the fractures that happened. With younger people, it's so obvious, even from doing Lonely Task Force, you can see I've moved to college. It isn't quite the course. I'm not that type of person. I don't seem to fit in. all of those things happening, and you can see where people be struggling. You know, single mothers, single parents, should I say, right?
Very isolating.
Very isolating. Mm. You know, it's great, you know, but it's not much fun talking to a five-year-old all day, every day. Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah. Very, very isolating.
Or so, giving up drink. You know, some people don't drink anymore for whatever reason, and then that's a big part of their social life cut off. Genuinely, like, I have several friends. I don't drink myself, and, like, I still go out to the pubs, but I can tell you now, I'll find it fair. I think at some point I'm going to not go to pubs because I'm finding it, like, a little bit annoying.
There's only so much of the same story you can hear over and over again from the same person.
Then what happens? Do you know, where do I go then? Do I ring up my friend? Because I'm a comedian, so I work in the evenings. I have my days free. A lot of my friends have office jobs and day jobs. So we're like passing ships, you know?
And again, I think change, I think around 25% of people now don't work 9 to 5.
Yeah.
You know, so there's a whole shift in that. And I think the social, and obviously being Ireland, it's a, you know, we navigate by church and pubs. Do you know what I mean? But in some way, we all know that maybe, you know, people's drinking, those harmful levels are on the way down, and it's going further. But I think you're right. In Ireland, there's always been the thing is, if you say you aren't drinking, you know, what's wrong? It's either there's physically something wrong with you, or else it's a case of, oh, they must have had a problem with the drink. You know,
that's why they gave up. You know? Yeah.
There's a great greeter with great suspicion.
Yeah.
But it has been a great place where people got together. But as we, but it's not something we should rely on. So it is something we need to cut down on. It is something we need to do. But what are we replacing these things with?
Yeah, yes, that's so true. What are we replacing? I think that needs to be a conversation where, like, people of all ages can come to an area and, like, socialise with each other. But I find, so the church is kind of going, the pub is going, like, because I grew up in a village, and I know that I grew up in a council estate in the middle of a village, so it was a smaller community inside an already small community, and we had 3 little bungalows of older people in them. And there was one person that lived on his own, and all the teenagers used to go up to his house. He used to record Top of the Pops on the VCR, and we'd watch it and play blackjack. We just knew that he would be on his own, so we'd spend our evenings there. And it was almost like a social club for us because we'd interact with each other and he'd be there. And it was actually some of the best memories I've ever had has been in that man's house. And he spent, because God rest him now, like, he's dead, but he spent, like, the latter half of his life never lonely, because just teenagers would come in, and it was great fun, and we treated it like a little community centre. And I'd love for people to have those types of interactions. Like, I really would. Although his diet was terrible. Oxtail soup, he was a real bachelor. Like,
oh, the tins, though.
The dehydrated packets of oxtail soup, and he'd microwave bacon. That was me. I would tell him all the time, get yourself a grill. Like, but he just would microwave the bacon and Brennan's bread. But we had great memories there. And it would be cool. I wonder, like, could that continue? Or we didn't have Facebook at the time.
Mm.
It's hard to talk about social media without sounding like a big fuddy-duddy.
It's hard to imagine a time before social media. And I was the same. I was in my 20s when it first, you know, came out, Facebook was a thing.
Yeah.
And it's hard to imagine a time without it now. Maybe we'll come full circle.
I think some of it will. I think the reality is of things, when something happens, we get these huge swings. I think around online, Facebook, everything else is. We do a huge amount of work around technology where people self-monitor their own health to keep themselves well. So there's a whole heap of things we can do that is tech for good. There's technology where we can use technology to keep people socially engaged and to drive human contact. And, you know, but the reality is we're only learning how to use it. We're only learning how to adapt it. It's a bit like the social media and some of the negatives where people have moved so much online. Some of that hasn't been regulated. It's been a bit of the Wild West, you know what I mean?
Mm.
And ultimately is regulation and our ability to cope will catch up here. And I think even conversations like this, where people start realising, actually, that's not fully real.
Yeah,
it's a place I can engage. I can, you know, Instagram, put up a nice photograph of a great day, take a picture of this, put it up and share that with my friends. Brilliant. Look, that's a great addition to your life because they might be far away or whatever. But the reality is I think people are learning, or we will learn, how to go, hang on, that's got a place
Yeah.
But where is its place and how much time do we put into it? Mm. And I think at the moment, I think there was a report last week about children and about cyber safe, keeping people cyber safe.
Mm.
And I think you put it down that the average child, I think 10 to 15, don't call, you know, it was roughly around that age group, was like 4.5 hours a day on the phone.
Communicating.
Wow.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Virtually communicating. Yeah. Like, is that real community? You know what I mean?
Oh, I think we're going to have like a thing like mindful socialising.
Sure, people send me emails or sitting at a desk 3 feet away. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah,
you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And I always say there's a difference. An email is information.
Yes.
Talking to me is communication.
Mm.
Talking to you requires tone. You know, for me to think about the tone I'm using, to think about the words I'm using, and also the time to approach you. While an email is just there sitting for you at your convenience to open it. So I haven't really inconvenienced you. Do you know, it's not mad. But if I came up to you, I'd be like, oh, he's taking a sip of his tea. I don't know. He'll probably hate me now for coming up to him at this point. It's so mad.
Body language, tone, timing, all that. Yeah, all the things that we're probably quite out of practice at.
Yeah.
Because of electronic communication and information.
Oh, Lord. I know that's going to be like, I definitely know there's going to be like some sort of like socializing yoga. You know what I mean? Instead of we doing mantras, we'll just be talking to each other. Although, like, the thing about masks, you know, the whole sign of peace and stuff?
Yeah.
That is about kind of communicating with your neighbor, isn't it?
It is.
They get some stuff right. Like, it's a good system.
Well,
in that way, we should have like an atheist church or whatever religion you are, and kind of just have people shaking each other's hands, singing a song together. I would love singing songs with people.
Great.
Football fans love it, don't they? They're all like chanting.
Yeah, and I think like that human contact is so vital, because ultimately is you know, I was talking to somebody who uses services there recently, and they'd probably in the last year spent 5 weeks in hospital, right? Mm-hmm. So obviously everybody's concerned about, you know, the 6 tablets a day they're on and the 5 weeks in hospital, and that's grand. And then they had other appointments in the next few months, so all those things that go with them. But as a person, what they were worried about was, is like, you know, that's 5 weeks. What am I doing with the other 47 weeks of the year? What am I doing? You know, I'm watching television here, you know, you know, 10, 12 hours a day. Do you know what I mean? And so they had huge faith, actually, in the health system, that they'd gone in, right, got treatment, got an operation, got this, you know, in and out a few times, and they'd been well looked after, and they felt they'd been well looked after. But then so much of what we're trying to do is how do you build a community then? Because for those other 47 weeks of the year, accepting that, you know, if somebody's in old age, you know what I mean, maybe 85 plus, they might go to hospital a couple of times a year. And that's great. And then we come home and go back to your routine and whatever that happens to be. But in some ways, it's building resilient communities that the people can go back to, because people expect maybe sometimes as you get older to be unwell or have times and things. But the point is how do I live the other 47 weeks of the year?
Mm.
And we haven't got a community infrastructure that fully understands that. We've got, you know, we've got certain disciplines working in the community, but they're there to do a job, and they might go in and see an older person do this and then they're gone.
Mm.
You know, they'll always be polite, but their job is to do what they're there to do.
Yeah.
So ultimately is this is where we have to reimagine how our communities work. And I think we will eventually grab hold of technology and realise, have those discussions about how do we make it technology for good and how do we use it to drive social interaction, not just, you know what I mean, to be something where you're on your phone looking at pictures, you know, 4 hours a day.
That's what makes me sad about self-serving tills that you get at supermarkets, because I know it's more convenient for the people that run the companies, but that's probably one person's social interaction gone for the week that they would have had. Like, I love watching people kind of have chats while they're getting their groceries done. And the more and more we go for convenience, the less and less FaceTime and social interaction.
And I think that things like that affect, you know, they're the small things.
Yeah.
The small things matter. Do you know what I mean? They're the things that affect every age group. You go along, you can get in and out of a shop without ever speaking to anybody, without asking a question, without doing that. Do you know what I mean? Head down, in, do. And the other tills, which is probably not fully relevant here, to drive me mad is the other supermarkets that have, you know, the really short at the back of the till.
That's
and it's a race to fill your back.
Yeah, that drives me mad.
Anyway,
there's no how are you. Get it in.
Get in. Yeah. Move on quickly. But maybe that's the way we're building services. That's the way we're building, you know what I mean? And we're building services, how we look at things, you know? Nobody gets an impression that they're really welcome to call into the bank anymore. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's please go online.
Yeah. There's very few banks very now true. That actually have human beings in them. Yeah. They're sparse. It's all online. So, Alison, Sean, I've asked you about what helps you stay more connected.
Mm-hmm.
And just asking now about during tough times, who or what do you reach for? Who or what is your go-to when times get tough? Sean, first of all.
I think, tough question, because at the end of the day is again, like everybody else has got older and been in middle age, so thing is that some of the connections I want to have are gone. Do you know what I mean?
Sure.
And everything else is. I think I'm lucky enough that I have a couple of close family members, but usually that's my part of call.
Mm.
Now, if they weren't there, I wonder what or how I'd cope. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, I think we do an awful lot where we have to try and figure some of this stuff out ourselves. And depending on where you are in life, and depending on where you are in your own health and welfare, is that could be a really hard thing to do. But I think for me, lucky enough, it is family. But then again, because of what I do, I see so many people who just don't have that support. And all of a sudden then, they've nobody to come home to get a diagnosis or in their health, or something happens and just nothing to fall back on.
Mm.
And it's painful, and it's a struggle for people. So, yeah, I'm lucky enough there, but I have at times looked at that and said, you know, what if that wasn't there?
Mm.
How would I cope? And like everybody else's, there's days where, where you've good days and bad days, work goes well or it doesn't go well, or other things in your life go well or go bad. So, I mean, we're all on our own little journeys, our own little things. But anybody who thinks that sadness or bereavement or any, you know, challenges won't come to their door, I don't know who they are. Do you know what I mean? Because we all need each other, and we're all going to suffer or have challenges come to us. And ultimately is it, you can't deal with these things on your own. It's just not physically possible or mentally possible.
Yeah. Alison, who or what do you reach for when times get tough?
Counselling. I go and get professional help because I love my family and my friends and stuff, but I have this weird thing where I don't want to be codependent on people. That's my own weirdness. So I just get professional help as much as I can.
I don't think it's weirdness. I think it's like independence. Do you know what I mean? I think it's a case of, you know, and there's some things you might not want other people to know.
I don't want to burden them. Do you know what that sounds like? And I know burdens, like, but it's so, I don't want to do that. So I don't think, and I probably some people might feel that they don't have proper connections with their friends or family because they don't tell them anything that's properly personal. But I don't think that's true. You know, that's the way I see it. It's like I love my friends and family, but I also love to be sane. So I get professional help as well on top.
Absolutely.
Medication as well. That's a good one.
They're two separate things. Like connections and relationships are separate from seeking that support professionally and other things that you need for your mental health. They can exist together and separately as well.
I know. I feel that there's a pressure on people now, where if they've like suicidal ideation or kind of mental health difficulty, that there's a message, you know, talk to someone. And sometimes it's hard to pick that someone.
Mm.
And sometimes it's easier maybe to pay someone and chat to them about it.
Mm.
And then maybe open up to your friends and family.
Yeah. When you have maybe a bit more space in your head or your own head around
when
it.
When you're able to communicate your thoughts properly. I think communication is key, and it's the I think half of our problems come from frustration at the lack of communication that we're able to put forward to people.
Mm.
Jesus, that's a very long sentence to say. Nothing at all.
Communicate with that very
yeah, long. Yeah. But that's what I do. I get professional help. But I do use my family. Jesus, the way I'm saying, I use my friends and family.
You lean on, you look to.
Yeah.
But I think there's a logic in it, because, I mean, if you've a pulled muscle, you go to a physio, right?
Mm. Yeah.
If you've a sore throat or something, you go to a doctor, right?
Yeah.
If you're sort of feeling there's situations where you can't cope, we have to make it, well, this is just a different option, right? And that's where it is. And that's the journey we need to go on, you know, and sort of say, like, you know, it is the same as nobody would be reticent about telling the world, I went to a physio the other day because I twisted my ankle.
That's true.
You know, I went to counsellor. Why? Do you know what? It was all a bit too much, or such and such happened, or this is happening, or I'm a little bit lost.
Mm-hmm.
Or I'm not sure where I am.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got to just get to that point where somebody says that and people go, oh yeah, Grant, you know, hope it's going all right. And I do think, and you're to be admired for saying that and to sharing that, because the reality about it is that's how other people will get the strength and the understanding to sort of share and say that. So just to say that to you. But it's important to acknowledge that, you know. But I'd also say that, you know, as people go to something like that, what they then do is you get the language to communicate with others what's going on.
Mm-hmm,
because I think for some people, and the people we support as well, you're always looking at people, and then they haven't got the language to express what's going on. Do you know what I mean? Like, for them, you know. We've done things where, I remember once somebody rang up because an old person and just need help with a bit of an outside tap, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, four skips later, like, completely, they couldn't move around the house for hoarding.
Yeah.
And where were their mental health? And all their love and all their belief was all invested in all these possessions and objects. And so it was a whole thing, you know what I mean?
Mm.
But their way of expressing it was, the only language they have is, oh, my outside tap's not working. Do you know what I mean? Like, so in some ways, the work there is slow and confidence building and all that. But ultimately is that's what we're here for. And that's ultimately why people should realise that these things are important. And it's just keeping mentally well and keeping socially active or keeping connected to people is as important to your health as going to your doctor or going to your physio. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? It's equally as important.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you wouldn't go to your, you know, your mate Emma if you had a broken shoulder or needed a decent massage. Unless she was a physio. So when I said those two things can exist separately and side by side.
I think it's because I was brought up since a very young age to be, I had a mental break when I was 13, and so my school were brilliant and provided like a counsellor and provided like psychoanalysts, all these different types of people.
Mm.
And each week I would go skip double German and go get my counselling. And my friends would be like, oh, what are you up to? I'm like, oh, just going to the counsellor. And they were grand and accepting of it. So I've never really felt mental health stigma, because I was just very lucky that I hope younger people now will feel that too.
Mm.
I think they do. I think I've relatives are 18, 16 or whatever. And the way they talk about mental health is so much different to the way I spoke about it when I was a young one even.
Yeah.
And I just feel happier for the next generation. Like, I do feel a lot of hope.
Yeah, yeah.
That's my biggest thing.
There's definitely, not to use that kind of, that sort of hackneyed phrase, but there's more of a conversation. It's more acceptable. It's more open. And thankfully, we're seeing that shift. It did take a lot of time, but over kind of a generational shift. Alison and Sean, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you very much.
It was really great. I learned so much. Thanks so much, Jenny.
Really enjoyed it. Thank you very much for the opportunity.